So today is the Chinatown lifting of Go Downhill. This is one of the most famous pastimes of Lord Shri Krishna. So first of all, what I was going to do was try and shed a little bit of light on Go Downhill itself. This is taken from Venu Gita, which is from the 10th skanda of Srimad Bhagavatam. So one gopi said, "Perhaps Providence has smiled upon the Palindis, who are free to follow Krishna as he wanders here and there in Vrindavan. But even their fortune is far distant from the exalted status of Giriraj, who is visited daily by Raj Bihari, while he roams with his cows in the pastures of Raja. With the proposal to take shelter of Sri Giriraj, confirmed by his confidantes, Sri Radha quickly turned to the window and, rising her right hand, pointed to the direction of Govardhan Hill. This sudden motion frightened her pet parrot, Supa, who spread her wings and frantically cried out, "Hari, Hari!" Her arms outstretched like a golden vine of loving aspirations, her cloth billowing in the wind. Sri Radha's deep regard for Govardhan brought him within the gopi's vision, brought him within the gopi's vision, and she said, "Antaya madera balarida sabayo yadam Krishna charana sparasya pramoda manam tanoti sago guna shupayo yad maniya suyala shakundara kundamulai." Of all the devotees, this Govardhan Hill is the best. Oh, my friends, this hill supplies Krishna and Balaram, along with their calves, cows, and cowherd friends, with all kinds of necessities. Water for drinking, very soft grass, caves, fruits, flowers, and vegetables. In this way, the hill offers respect to the Lord. Being touched by the lotus feet of Krishna and Balaram, Govardhan Hill appears very jubilant. I'll read that again. Of all the devotees, this Govardhan Hill is the best. Oh, my friends, this hill supplies Krishna and Balaram, along with their calves, cows, and cowherd friends, with all kinds of necessities, water for drinking, very soft grass, caves, fruits, flowers, and vegetables. In this way, the hill offers respect to the Lord. Being touched by the lotus feet of Krishna and Balaram, Govardhan Hill appears very jubilant. That's Srimad Bhagavatam 10, Canto 10, 21, 18. The gopis were far distant from Govardhan Hill, yet they had faith that as the greatest of devotees, he was always in the proximity of their beloved. Because the gopis are always absorbed in thought of Krishna, in thoughts of Sri Krishna, they too are never separated from him. Thus, by proximity to a common object, Sri Hari, the love of the gopis now impelled Giriraj to appear before them in his devotional splendor. Srila Sanatana Goswami explains that although technically beyond the gopis' vision, Govardhan Hill appeared to give him his darshan, or rather he appeared to have the darshan of the gopis. The hairs on her body standing erect in jubilation, her eyes thrilling at the beauty of the king of mountains, and her delicate eyebrows arched in wonder, Sri Radha signed, "How fortunate Giriraj is." After a moment of silence, Radhika continued, Shakijana women, who are known as the fair sex, are by their physical disposition weak or abala. This is certainly the case for the Braja Gopis, who to their great unhappiness are devoid of all strength, being under the oppressive control of their husbands. Therefore, our great misfortune is that we cannot worship Sri Krishna like Giriraj. With a sense of conclusive determination, she says, "This situation can only be remedied when we take shelter of Sri Krishna through the medium of his infallible servant, Govardhan Hill." Since the discussion of Krishna's glories is excelled only by the glorification of his devotees, the gopis engage in a cheerful and animated discussion about the greatness of Govardhan Hill. One gopi, her hands folded in expressive mudra, glanced towards Giriraj from the corner of her eyes and said, "Beloved friends, whose life is the service of Sri Krishna, know for certain that of all the devotees, beginning from Narada, this Govardhan Hill is the best and is therefore known as Haridasa Varya." Haridasa Varya. Anticipating the questions of her friend, she continued, "As the son of the great Drona Chala, who lives in a far distant Salmali Dweep, our Giriraj is without rival amongst the race of mountains, but his glories are not limited to his species, for he is truly greater than all other Vaishnavas that we know." Om Agyanatimanandasya Yanangana Salakaya Sri Chaitanya Mahavishnu Chaitanya Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Nitati Swapadantikam Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Vyada Shri Guru Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So of all the devotees, this Govardhan Hill is the best. So this Giriraj Govardhan Hill is very mysterious in terms of understanding that actually a hill can be a great devotee. Normally in the material world, a hill is pretty boring. We look at hills, we don't see them as great devotees. We don't understand that something which is inanimate can become animate. Yeah. So generally in the material world, everything is inanimate. The dead energy. But when the Supreme Personality of Godhead comes in the material world, he brings with him his transcendental devotees. And as Srimati Radharani is pointing out, one of the greatest devotees of Lord Shri Krishna is Govardhan Hill. Govardhan Hill is very important. Prabhupada one time was explaining that many people cannot understand the appearance of God. Avajananti Mamudha, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Avajananti Mamudha. Those fools, those who are foolish, they cannot understand the transcendental nature. As Krishna says, they do not know my supreme dominion over all that be. So those fools think, Krishna says, they think I've appeared in a human form. But they do not know my transcendental nature, my supreme dominion over all that be. So because God has dominion over everything, therefore, that which is material becomes spiritual. So it's not, don't understand that, just like Prabhupada says, sometimes if the king visits the prison, don't think that the king has become prisoner. Don't think that when Krishna comes in the material world, that he also becomes somehow bound down by the stringent laws of the material nature. So when Krishna comes into the material world, he brings it with him, his transcendental Goloka. This go is very important. Prabhupada said, Krishna comes as coward boy. So for many people, for God to be coward boy doesn't make much sense. The idea of God being majestic and creating universes and destroying, many people have an idea that God should be a destroyer, as in most religions, and he sent them down to hell, to damnation. There was gnashing of teeth and shivering, people were crying, there was great whining, and there was horrible sounds. That's our general idea of God. We generally have some sort of perverted, gross concept of God, that God somehow should be associated with destruction. Because generally destruction is something we all fear tremendously. Everyone is frightened of death. That's why you find many churches, there are plenty of graveyards outside, and people come out in black, and they read things about damnation, and how people come out of their graves and they are all resurrected from the ashes and the dead, the cobwebs, and the material world. So here we find different things. When God comes into the material world, he comes as cowherd boy. So this is called Govinda. Go, the word go is very important because go means senses. Go also means that which gives pleasure to the senses. Just like the planet, Goloka. Goloka. Goloka means the planet of the Lord, which gives all pleasure to the senses. Which gives all pleasure to the senses. And go means cow. Just like we see that Krishna comes with cowhead stick. He comes with cowhead stick, and Balaram comes with plow. So Balaram Prabhupada said, this is not an ordinary thing. Krishna comes with flute and cowhead stick. And Balaram also has cowhead stick and plow. So this is to give actual direction for all human beings. Because actually all pleasure in this material world can be attained from, as Prabhupada says, having a very nice cow and some land. Actually, if you have a nice piece of land, you have a cow, and if you need, you can have wife also. You have wife, you have some house, you have cow, and you have some land. So from the land, you take nice, juicy vegetables, grains. So that's why Balaram does plow. Plow means you should plow the land. Agriculture, development. This is the real, actual economic development. In modern age, people have this idea, economic development means building skyscraper buildings, fast motorways, having big industrialized enterprises, smog, and furnaces, and fumes. There should be big, elaborate technology, sophisticated arrangements in every city. These do not give any happiness. Rather, they cause immense anxiety. They cause immense anxiety. Because actually, all of these things are anatta. Anatta means they are unnecessary. They're not required. They don't give. You can go out and buy 50 televisions. Does it mean you become happy? No. It's simply all of this technology. Everyone is chasing after technology. But this technology does not actually give any real happiness. Because actually, the body is very simple. We have very simple requirements. The body is not very sophisticated. We find, generally speaking, that everyone is happy with different types of rasa. Rasa means relationship or taste. Just like this rasa, people don't understand rasa. They don't understand how you obtain rasa. People think that rasa relationship should be very complex. That you, just like these modern industrial enterprises, what we call economic development, it is very, very complex. There is so much sophistication. But at the same time, in actuality, if you find people all, they go in the thousands into the city. But then when they come out of the city, where do they go? They go to a nice little pond, a garden in the backyard. They're cooking some nice vegetables and milk products. Obviously, unfortunately, they put some beetles. But generally speaking, if you find when a man has finished working hard in a big industrial city, he'll come home and he'll want to be with his wife, his children, some nice food on the table, and he'll want to sit in the garden with some nice sunshine and some animals running around. This is actually people's idea. Idealistic. Everywhere you go in the world, you will find people want actually very simple things in life. Even though big industrialized city like New York, if you find around New York, there is tremendous gardens and houses and there are so many beautiful parks, isn't it? So we can understand that the natural inclination of the mind is towards goodness. Generally, we want goodness. And this goodness means that there should be very nice arrangement. Nice arrangement, as is explained here. That the hill of Govardhan is giving very nice water for drinking, very soft grass. There are wonderful caves, fruits, flowers, and vegetables. In this way, the hills offers respect to the Lord, being touched by the lotus feet of Krishna and Balaram. So when the Lord comes into the material world, He displays His transcendental nature. His transcendental nature. So that transcendental nature has to be studied. The nature of the Lord is that He is demonstrating what is the real abundance of life. What is the real abundance of life? Of course, in the material world, this material world is a perverted reflection of the spiritual world. So even this goodness is not pure, even though we see that there are many places where there are beautiful parks and beautiful arrangements. But in actuality, you won't find any people there. You don't find people there. You find that people are too busy. If you go to Hyde Park, you'll only find a few people there. If you go to St. James's Park, Regent Park. But if you go to one building here, you can find 12,000 people in one building. You see? Automatically, there's 12,000 people. Why? Because they're chasing after this Rajagun. Rajagun means mode of passion. In the mode of passion, there are unlimited desires, unlimited longings. There are so many complicated issues which are actually manifested from the mind. So when the Lord appears in the material world, He comes in this form of the most beautiful sweetness. That sweetness is, of course, very, very esoteric. Now, even though God is there, but at the same time, He remains hidden. This is described by Queen Kunti. And she's described that so Namashe Purusham Tvadyam Ishwaram Prakrite Param Alaksham Sarva Bhutanam Antarbahir Avastitam. O Krishna, I offer my respectful obeisance unto you because you are the original personality and are unaffected by the qualities of this material world. You are existing both within and without of everything, yet you are invisible to all. So here, this prayer is by Queen Kunti Devi. And as she said, that Purusham, you are the Supreme Person, you are the original Ishwaram. You are the original Ishwaram. So, to understand that God is the original person, to understand that God is the original person is actually very, very difficult for people. It's very difficult for people because even though we are persons, the most difficult thing to relate to God is to be personal. To be personal to God. Because generally, we are impersonalists. You see, our tendency is that we all want to be personal. We all want to be individually, personally complete. But we are impersonal on account of association with this dead matter, this material world. Our actual real feelings have become deadened. We have become deadened. We have become like rock. Our heart is like rock. So generally speaking, on account of this covering of material consciousness, it is very, very difficult for us to be personal. We're not attracted to personal things. Just like if you see someone in a car, you're more interested in the car than the person. You see? If you see someone wearing some clothes, you're more interested in the clothes than the person. If you see someone with some opulences, you're more interested in the opulence than the person. You see? So this is our tendency. We are always attracted to impersonalism. Impersonalism. Just like people, they're attracted to the creation of God, but they have no interest in God. No interest whatsoever. What's God got to do? Why should I worry about God? Because we see that generally speaking, even though there is so much variegatedness in this material world, we don't think that God should be a person. In most religions, the idea of God being a person is not actually so profound. They don't actually, they say, okay, he's a light, he's an energy, he's something vague, something indescribable. So we use this idea of indescribable or inconceivable actually to dismiss God. Therefore, when Krishna comes into the material world, then he actually brings with him his sweetness, the sweetness of the personality of Godhead. And, of course, this sweetness is demonstrated in the sweetness of Vrindavan. Vrindavan is very nicely described in the 10th canto, that in Vrindavan there are very beautiful lakes, there are beautiful mountain hills, there are very beautiful waterfalls, and there is Kalindi Jamuna. Kalindi Jamuna means there is a beautiful river there. That river is flowing through Vrindavan. On the banks of that river, there are many, many, as we say, Jairada Madhava Kunja Vihari. Kunja Vihari means Kunj. Kunja. Kunja means like, what do you call it when there's power, when there's bushes. Yeah, Kunja Vihari. There are many, many bushes, but there's also little, what do they call them? Not only bushes. Groves. Groves. There are many groves. Just like around Radhakund, there are millions of groves. Each of those groves, gopis have their little, they have their places. Of course, I'm not an authority on Vrindavan, unfortunately. But in those groves, there are beautiful jewels, and they're made out of different touchstones. So, Chintamani Dham. Chintamani Dham means that the transcendental abode of Krishna is non-different from Krishna. So, we can understand that when Krishna comes into the material world, he demonstrates, first thing is this Goraksha, this protection of the cow, because the cow is a very beautiful animal, not just sentimental. Some people say, you Indians, you all worship the cow. No, the cow is the most wonderful animal, because in actuality, the cow gives you miracle food. Miracle food. Just like Prabhupada says, that there is so much grass, which is useless. You can look at grass, it looks very nice, but grass is useless. So, in actuality, what is the use of grass? But here is a machine that turns grass into ghee, into yogurt, into double cream, into curd sabji, sour cream. They, not only that, there are varieties. I know, I was speaking about one, they call them Rasmalai Wala. They make sweets. He said he can produce hundreds of sweets, hundreds of different types of sweets from milk. Just from that one product of milk, there are hundreds and hundreds of different types of sweets. They're very tasty. We find that this cow is truly miraculous because everything that comes from it gives great pleasure. Great pleasure. Who won't say that they have tremendous pleasure having a very nice curd subject? Who won't say that having thick double cream with peaches and strawberries doesn't give you great pleasure? It gives tremendous pleasure. Tremendous pleasure. And the cow is producing ghee. Ghee is miraculous food. If you mix anything with ghee, it becomes tasty. Prabhupada said, if you cook with this ghee and distribute the food, you will stop people eating meat. Because the taste of the ghee is so powerful that when you cook with ghee, people become actually changed. I practically saw in the early days of Krishna consciousness, so many people come off drugs, come off all sorts of weird things just by taking lots of ghee. When we started, in the early days, Jamuna would cook and she'd never allow oil in the kitchen. There could never be oil in the kitchen. And we always had to have lots of ghee, even though we were very poor. So the feasts were very, very tasty. So from this ghee, so many wonderful things. From milk, the brain is actually milk. We can understand that milk is also a miracle food because it builds up the, what do you call it, the brain
tissues.
The subtle brain tissues. So one can live on milk. Raghunath Das Goswami used to eat one piece of butter every 2 days. And Prabhupada said sometimes he would forget also. I don't know if we're on that level. But we can live on milk. If anybody here wants to perform little tapasya, and all you need every day is 2 cups of milk, you can survive. Milk is a complete food. So the Lord is known as Purnam. Om Purnamada Purnamidam. Punat Purnamudachate. The personality of Godhead is perfect and complete. And because He is completely perfect, all emanations from Him are also perfectly equipped as complete wholes. This material world is a complete arrangement of the complete. And therefore, within this world, we see so many wonderful arrangements. There are so many wonderful arrangements. Within the, as Prabhupada used to say, the water is coming, it's stored in the mountains as ice, it runs down as rivers, the rivers are irrigating the land is producing beautiful grains, the grains are nourished by the sun, they give vitality, they give energy, the cow is eating the grass, producing milk, yogurt, cheese, even the cow dung, even the very thing which all of us are disgusted by. Huh? We're all disgusted by dung. Nobody's very proud of their dung. But cow dung is wonderful. Cow dung is wonderful because cow dung, it contains all antiseptic properties. In India, you will go to villages, the whole village is cow dung. Cow dung village. And there are no cockroaches, no flies. In the kitchen, you will never find a fly or any insects because the cow dung keeps them all away. They don't like cow dung. It's antiseptic. It's propyleptic. Is that the word, propyleptic? What does that mean? Prabhupada used that word, propyleptic. What does it mean? Huh? Pure. Propyleptic. I had a terrible education. But anyway. So, I was too busy in the grass. So the thing is that this antiseptic cow dung, even the cow's urine can cure disease. There's a doctor in India, he'll cure any disease you have with cow dung. There's even a devotee now makes cow dung soap. You can get cow dung soap, cow dung cream, cow dung oil, and you can drink it. It's very good for your liver. So, the cow, there's not one defect in the cow. Also, you see that the cow is very much in the mode of goodness. When you see the cow, you feel calm, isn't it? Because it's not a bull. A cow, you want to hug. Usually you see a cow, you want to hug the cow. Isn't it? You want to hug the cow, especially calves. They're very beautiful, you want to hug. So it brings out very nice sentiments. Wherever there are cows and there's land, so go means cow, go means land, go means the senses. Go means the planet also, go loka. Go loka means where everything is perfect and complete. You see, everything is perfect and complete. Because if you study your body psychologically, you need certain things. And when you're in a very nice environment where there are beautiful waterfalls and rivers and cows and peacocks and cuckoos, and there is very nice bird sabji and these things, then you're completely satisfied. And you need japa mala. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So we need all these things because they are actually given to us by the Supreme Personality of God. So because the Lord is Purnam, therefore His land is also Purnam. Vrindavan is complete. When you go to Vrindavan, how many people have been to Vrindavan? Yes, so many people have been. You become immediately calm, isn't it? As soon as you arrive in Vrindavan, you become calm. And that's if you don't go to the restaurant. But generally, if you go and you wander around Vrindavan chanting your rounds, you will find peacocks are there. You will find there are very nice groves. Of course, now Vrindavan's a little spoiled. Originally, 5,000 years ago, we can see the descriptions in Prabhupada's, when Prabhupada is describing the autumn. What is that description of autumn in the Krishna book? Then you will get a very nice idea how Vrindavan is very sweet land. And of course, by reading the 10th skanda, the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, you will get idea that what is Vrindavan? Vrindavan means to love Krishna. In Vrindavan, there is transcendental reciprocation of love between Krishna and his devotees. So this is the real meaning of actual spiritual life. Spiritual life means to love. So many people don't understand that if we want to love God, then we need to see God in some sort of awe and reverence. But no, this is a wrong idea. Actually, we find that the general tendency, Bhaktisiddhanta used a very nice thing, he said it's called anthropomorphism. In the material world, people suffer from anthropomorphism. And anthropomorphism means projecting your concepts onto the absolute truth. In other words, we all live in a very small world, all of us. We are very much restricted in this material body, and on account of this association with the material body, we are conditioned. As Krishna says, Ramayavamsa Jivaloke Jivabhuta Sanatana Namasastani Indriyani Prapiktistani Karshasi, that the living entities, they are my part and parcels, and they are in me, and they are mine. But due to conditional life, they are struggling very hard with the six senses, which include the mind. So the living entity in the material world struggles very hard with the senses. All of our knowledge is gained with our senses. And therefore, as Prabhupada says, in the material world, everything appears, as we say, familiarity breeds contempt. Actually, because of our experiences of this material world, we are actually contemptuous. We have contempt, at least I do, for practically everything I see. There's some sort of contempt there. I like people for 5 minutes. I like places for 10 minutes. So we find, if we study it in a very, okay, maybe in a little sort of cutting way or sarcastic way, but we find that in the material world, that everything is very hackneyed and dull. Generally, things are very dull. The varieties of the material world, on account of experiencing them through our material senses, they become very dull. Familiarity breeds contempt. And that contemptuous nature makes us actually impersonal. It makes us impersonal. We tend to actually reject everything. Therefore, we find that this, as the Shastras explain, this tendency, what we call towards bhoga tyaga. In the material world, people want to enjoy the material world. They're called bogies, bhoga. They're after bhoga, enjoyment. And then when they find that this enjoyment is stale, they become tyagis. They become tyagi means renunciate. They tend to give up the material world. So generally we find that our experiences of the material world, the worst experiences we have is other people. The worst experiences we've had in this world is other people. Other people means adibhautika. Adibhautika means other living entities. Every single living entity in this world is a cause of anxiety to you. Every single creature that walks, every single thing that moves is a source of anxiety to you. Now, you may say that's not true. But in reality, you don't know what you're going to get in terms of what someone can do to you. So we generally find that our association with personalism is actually a very, inadequate, or it is a very negative experience. We have a very negative experience. And therefore, when we come to the idea of associating with God, then it's very, very, very difficult to understand God as a person. Because automatically our experiences of people is that they all have inadequacies. That they're all inadequate. Similarly, we have experience of places as being very inadequate. We have experiences of anywhere we go, quickly we become bored, isn't it? We become very bored. Like if the idea of the spiritual world running around with some cows. Doesn't sound very interesting, does it? I mean, you go in any field and run around with some cows. And that there's some special hill. Yeah, there are loads of hills. You know, I've never seen any interesting hill. There's the odd one with a bit of funny shape, or a big size, or a little size like that. So generally speaking, the idea of a person, that God is a person, or the idea that God is a coward boy, or the idea that God lives in a little village, and in that village there are some simple things, is very, very difficult for people to understand. Therefore, generally you find that people's conception of God is always that God should be superhuman, isn't it? Superhuman, super mundane. So we say that God should be something extraordinary, isn't it? We always have this idea, when we think of God in terms of extraordinary. Extraordinary means that Okay, I'm pretty ordinary. Some of us are extremely ordinary. And that, of course, when we think of the idea of God, we think that at least it should be better than me, isn't it? Now, as Prabhupada used to say, when we say God is great, how great is God? We have no idea. So therefore, we have this sort of anthropomorphic idea, where we try to project onto God some sort of super mundane concept. So in other words, that if someone is extraordinarily powerful, then automatically we have more veneration towards that person being God. So therefore, that is why we find in the pastimes of Krishna that even though Krishna comes into the material world as a young boy, as he says, that on account of his assuming this human form, that many people think that, yes, Krishna was just an ordinary human being. What did he do that was so extraordinary? So therefore, when the Lord comes into the material world, he always demonstrates Urukrama. He is known as Urukrama. Urukrama means that he does something extraordinary. Extraordinary, very wonderful. So therefore, this pastime of Giriraj, the lifting of Govardhan Hill, is a display of the Lord's inconceivable Shakti, his unlimited powerful energies. And therefore, the pastimes are very important because we see that the appearance of Krishna within the material world is bewildering, even to the great demigods. We see that Lord Brahma, he also became bewildered, that how can the supreme personality of Godhead, the controller, creator, maintainer, destroyer of all of the cosmic manifestation, how can he be playing around in Vrindavan in a little village? Just like when you go to Vrindavan, sometimes you look around these little villages, you think, what is extraordinary about this? See? So the demigods were also thinking, what's so extraordinary about this little boy? He's playing with flute and running around with cows in the pasture grounds of Vrindavan. So therefore, this is very nice pastimes when, of course, the tradition in India is that generally the villagers, they're very simple. Villagers are very simple. They're very simple people. So generally they offer oblations to the demigods, particularly with no variegatedness, without rain. So therefore the rain is extremely important because the rain is giving us so many varieties. From the rain combined with the sun comes mangoes, bananas, pineapples, there are different types of vegetables, cauliflowers, potatoes, there are aubergines, there are so many things. They're all coming because of rain. Therefore, when you're a farmer, the rain becomes extremely important. So when the cowherd boys wanted to offer oblations to Indra, then they were going to do this Indra Puja, Indra Yagna. And therefore, they gathered together so many different sacrifices of grains and milk and ghee and yogurt and so many different things. All of these things, they are produced by the, if you like, the combination of the control of the demigods. And therefore, one has to acknowledge the demigods in the sense that if one, just like in this country, there are administrators. You have to acknowledge the administrators of the country. You can't be anarchist. So therefore, similarly, the cowherd boys being very simple, they arranged a very wonderful arrangement for worshiping Indra. But Krishna, and what we'll do is, because my explanation, we'll read a little bit, where actually Krishna decides that there's no need to worship these demigods. Yeah. This is a worshiping of Govardhan Hill. While engaged with the Brahmanas who were too involved in the performance of Vedic sacrifice, Krishna and Balaram also saw that the coward men were preparing a similar sacrifice in order to pacify Indra, the King of Heaven, who was responsible for supplying water. As stated in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the devotee of Krishna has strong and firm faith in the understanding that if he simply engages in Krishna consciousness and Krishna's transcendental loving service, then he is freed from all other obligations. A pure devotee of Lord Krishna doesn't have to perform any of the ritualistic functions enjoined in the Vedas, nor is he required to worship any demigods. Being a devotee of Lord Krishna, one is understood to have performed all kinds of Vedic rituals and all kinds of worship to the demigods. Just by performing the Vedic ritual ceremonies or worshiping the demigods, one does not develop devotional service for Krishna. So this is very important, that the demigods, although they provide everything within the universe, they're nothing. They're nothing to Krishna. You see, they're nothing to Krishna. They are simply very insignificant servants of Krishna. They're very insignificant servants of Krishna. So therefore Krishna says, those who are less intelligent, they worship the demigods. You see? Those who are less intelligent are attracted to the material opulences of this material world. They're attracted to them because they don't have much intelligence. Because they don't understand who has created the opulence. You see? Just like you may be attracted to so many different varieties in this material world, but who created them? You see? Just like I may look and see a beautiful girl, immediately my mind is attracted. But I should be thinking, who created that girl? There are billions of girls. Billions of them. So who created them? Isn't it? That's intelligent. Why be attracted to some combination of matter when one should understand who created that? Similarly, why be attracted to all this wonderful power and display of wonderful arrangement in the material world when one should understand who created it? So therefore, one who is a devotee of Krishna has no obligation to anyone or anything, because automatically they are, as Prabhupada said, pouring water on the source. Just like if you pour water on the root of the tree, automatically every single part of the tree is benefited. Krishna ordered a stop to all such activities by his devotees, for he wanted to firmly establish exclusive devotional service during his presence in Vrindavan. Krishna knew that the coward men were preparing for the Indra sacrifice because he is the omniscient personality of Godhead. But as a matter of etiquette, he began to inquire with great honor and submission from the elder personalities like Maharaj Nanda and others. Krishna asked his father, "My dear father, what is this arrangement going on for a great sacrifice? What is the result of such sacrifice, and for whom is it meant? How is it to be performed? Will you kindly let me know? I am very anxious to know this procedure, so please explain to me the purpose of the sacrifice." Upon this inquiry, his father, Nanda Maharaj, remained silent. Thinking that his young boy would not be able to understand the intricacies of performing the jagna, Krishna, however, persisted, "My dear father, for those who are liberal and saintly, there is no secrecy. They do not think anyone to be a friend or enemy because they are always open to everyone. And even for those that are not so liberal, nothing should be secret from the family members and friends, although secrecy may be maintained for persons who are inimical. Therefore, you cannot keep any secrets from me. All persons are engaged in fruitive activities. Some know what these activities are, and they know the results. And some execute activities without knowing the purpose of the result. A person who acts with full knowledge gets the full result. One who acts without knowledge does not get such a perfect result." So this is very important, that if you are worshipping demigods, you must understand what is the worship and what is the result. In other words, what can the demigods give you? They can only give you what they have. They can't give you anything else. You see? You see the point? They may be controlling rain, so you're going to get lots of rain. But you can go to Innisfil in Ireland and you get loads of rain. So what is the use of all your rain? So similarly, we find that this worship of demigods is also a very good example, because in the material world, all of us, we worship materialism. We worship materialism. We are very attracted to increasing or improving our situation. This is called artha, economic development. So dharma, artha, kama. Kama means sense gratification. So people are very attracted to increasing their sense gratification. That is the nature of the material world. So Krishna is showing here that those who are worshippers of demigods, they are simply materialists. You see, they are materialists. Many people think that it's religious to worship demigods. It is not religious. It is not religious. It is simply 100% materialistic. There's nothing spiritual about worshipping any demigod. You see? Now, in India, you'll find, just like I went to one man's house, he had every deity on his altar that you could think of. He even had Indira Gandhi and the Pope. And I couldn't believe this guy. I've been traveling around Indian houses for years, and this guy took the biscuit. This guy took the cookie. So I said to him, literally, his altar was nearly as big as that. He had so many things on his altar, pictures. And I said to him, "Which one are you worshiping?" He said, "I'm worshiping all of them." So I said to him, "How can you be worshiping all of them?" He said, "Because one of them must be right." He said, "And I'm not taking any chances." So the point is that everyone gives their worship. This is called puja. We give puja. But puja is not, actually, is not very beneficial, because puja, you do puja with the idea of getting some result. You understand? So the idea, Krishna is pointing out that, yes, you are worshipping demigods, but do you know, really, what these people are, and what they can do, and what is the result? You see? So this is the fact, that those who are less intelligent, as Krishna says in the Gita, because generally people who are less intelligent, you see, they are seeing the effect, but they're not seeing the cause. That's why Lord Brahma said, Ishvara Parama Krishna Sarva, Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha, Anadi Adi Govinda Sarvakarna Karna. Sarvakarna Karna means cause of all causes. So therefore, we find that generally speaking, even in our Krishna conscious movement, we generally are more attracted to the effects of spiritual life. The effects means we want some nice situation, we want to make some nice arrangement. Everyone is trying to better themselves, isn't it? Everyone in the material world, we are trying to better ourselves in some degree or way. And in actuality, we can understand that Krishna now is chastising his father in a very nice way, because Krishna is a young boy, 7 years, I think he was about 7 years of age. His father didn't think he'd understand. But Krishna asked my father, what is this arrangement going on for great sake? What is the result of such a sacrifice? And for whom is it meant? How is it performed? Will you let me know? So then, on hearing this inquiry from Krishna, Maharaj Nanda replied, my dear boy, this ceremonial performance is more or less traditional. His rainfall is due to the mercy of King Indra, and the clouds are his representatives. And because water is so important for our living, we must show some gratitude to the controller of this rainfall, Maharaj Indra. We are arranging, therefore, to pacify King Indra, because he has very kindly sent us clouds to pour down sufficient quantity of rain for successful agricultural activities. So this is the general tendency of people, that we find that always in religion, in any type of religious sacrifice, there's always the idea of some gain. Therefore it says, kaitava in the Bhagavad. This kaitava, cheating mentality, the crafty mentality. Everyone has this craftiness, that somehow we should gain something from our service. Services, everyone is doing service, but it's always with gain. If you study, every single activity we do is tendency to be motivated by gain, either directly, indirectly, in some shape or form. So therefore, religion is contaminated, kaitava, by this cheating propensity, where there is the idea of some gain. So Nanda Maharaj is explaining about this sacrifice. So with this purpose in mind, Krishna, after hearing Nanda Maharaj's, as it says here, Krishna's event was especially meant for the annihilation of the demons and protection of the devotees. King Indra was certainly a devotee, not a demon, but because he was puffed up, Krishna wanted to teach him a lesson. He first tried to make Indra angry by stopping the Indra puja, which was arranged by the coward men of Vrindavan. With this purpose in mind, Krishna began to talk as if he were an atheist, supporting the philosophy of karma, mimamsa. Advocates of this type of philosophy do not accept the supreme authority of the personality of Godhead. They put forth the argument that if anyone works nicely, the result is sure to come. So here Krishna has taken the position of atheist, and he's saying that by your actions, you get reaction, the result comes. So why worship anything? So we see, Prabhupada said, even Krishna can become atheist. So he is showing his wonderful pastimes that he wants to actually stop the worship of King Indra. So therefore he begins by teaching atheism. So, my dear father, I don't think you need to worship any demigod for the successful performance of your agricultural activities. Every living being is born according to his past karma and leaves this life simply taking the result of his present karma. Everyone is born in different types of species of life according to his past activities, and he gets his next birth according to the activities of this life. Different grades of material happiness and the stress, comforts, and disadvantages of life are just different results of different kinds of activities, either from the past or present life. So, Maharaj Nanda and the other elderly members argued that without satisfying the predominating God, one cannot derive any good results simply by material activities. This is actually a fact. For example, it is sometimes found that in spite of first-class medical help and treatment by a first-class physician, a diseased person dies. So the nature of the material world is it is always trying to make us think that we're the doer. That is the power of this material world. Everyone thinks that they're the doer. And therefore, the arrangement of matter is based upon this karmic consciousness. Everyone thinks that by my efforts, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, the demon also thinks that by my endeavors I have become wealthy. So much wealth have I got today, and tomorrow I get more. He is my enemy, and I will destroy him, etc. So we always have this idea that it's by our endeavors that we are gaining something. So although Krishna was giving this philosophy, the coward men did not accept it, and they pointed out that without actually satisfying the predominating God, one cannot derive any good result. And this is seen. We see that actually, even though society has incredible economic development, and just like the most advanced countries in this world, they have immense economic development, immense arrangement, but we find that nobody is actually happy. People are not happy. They're not happy. So this is one of the wonders of this world, that no matter how much materialistic arrangement you make, you become more miserable. You see, you actually become more and more miserable. The highest suicide rate is in Sweden, which has the most advanced economic development in the world. Second is Japan, which is in America, I think it's third. So if you go to countries like Africa, they have very little suicide, because they have very simple living, and there's no complication. As a matter of fact, they have a bit of a lazy life, because everything grows on trees. And if you want mangoes, they're there. If you want pineapples, they're there. Everything is growing, sprouting from everywhere. There's billions of mangoes grow wild, billions of avocados grow wild, billions of pineapples grow wild. So therefore, in actuality, this point being made by Krishna, that unless one worships by Nanda Maharaj, unless one satisfies the supreme authority, but of course, here Krishna says, my dear father, there's no need to worship the demigod Indra. But Krishna says everyone has to achieve the result of his own work. We can actually see that one becomes busy according to the natural tendency of his work, and according to the natural tendency, all living entities, either human beings or demigods, achieve their respective results. So Krishna is convincing gradually Nanda Maharaj to give up the sacrifice. And of course, ultimately Nanda Maharaj and the coward boys, they give up the sacrifice for Indra. And instead, actually, Krishna advocates that they should rather worship Govardhan Hill, as it says here, because Govardhan Hill, of all the devotees, Govardhan Hill is the best of my friends. This hill supplies Krishna Balaram along with calves, cows and coward friends with all kinds of necessities. So in Govardhan Hill, there are beautiful waterfalls, there are beautiful fruits, there are beautiful flowers. Actually, the Govardhan, you can get anything you want. This is called Kalpa Vriksha. In the spiritual world, the land is also completely spiritual. Spiritual means that it is completely conscious, and therefore everything is there in perfection. That, in other words, there is perfect arrangement for drinking water, fruits, there are beautiful vegetables there, and there is surabhirabhi palyantam. Surabhirabhi palyantam means there are billions of cows, and they have big, big milk bags that are overflowing. So actually in Vrindavan there is always streams of milk. And these cows are called surabhi. Surabhi means that they can fulfill any desire of their devotee. These are not ordinary cows. And these cows are also wandering on the hill of Govardhan. So therefore Krishna is explaining to his father, Nanda Maharaj, and the coward man, that actually there's no need to worship anything except Govardhan Hill, because Govardhan Hill is supplying. So, in his statement, Lord Krishna, so he says here, my dear father, he says here, Krishna further explained to father, the cosmic manifestation is going on under the influence of the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. These three modes are the cause of creation, maintenance, and destruction. The cloud is caused by the action of the mode of passion, therefore it is the mode of passion which causes the rainfall. And from the rainfall, the living entities derive their results. Success in agricultural work. What then has Indra to do with this affair? Even if you do not please Indra, what can he do? We do not derive any special benefit from Indra. Even if he is there, he pours water on the ocean also, where there is no need of water. So he is pouring water on the ocean or on the land. It does not depend on our worshipping him. As far as we are concerned, we do not need to go to another city or village or foreign country. There are palatial buildings in the cities, but we are satisfied living in the forest of Vrindavan. Our specific relationship with Govardhan Hill and Vrindavan Forest and nothing more. I therefore request you, my dear father, to begin the sacrifice that will satisfy the local brahmanas in Govardhan Hill, and let us have nothing to do with Indra. So this point is also there that you don't need all of these arrangements in the material world. Everyone is making so much arrangements. And practically speaking, they are worshipping materialism. People are worshipping materialism. They are worshipping cars, computers. They are practically absorbed in all of these anatta. Anatta means unwanted things, useless activity. And in reality, the actual things which people need, they do not understand. Because the thing which actually people need is to have actual, as they say in India, shanti, peace. They need peace. People need peace. That peacefulness can only come about when there is proper living. Proper living means that there should be simple living and high thinking. So Prabhupada says here that in this statement, Lord Krishna practically described the whole economy of the Vaishya community. In all communities of human societies, and in the animal kingdom, amongst the cows, dogs, goats, etc., everyone has his part to play. Each of us is to work in cooperation for the total benefit of all society, which includes not only animate objects, but also inanimate objects like hills and land. The Vaishya community is specifically responsible for the economic improvement of the society by producing grains, by giving protection to the cows, by transporting food when needed, and by banking and finance. From this statement, we learn also that the cats and dogs, although not so important, are not to be neglected. Cow protection is actually more important than protection of cats and dogs. Another hint we get from the statement is that the chandalas, or the untouchables, are also not to be neglected by the higher classes. Everyone is important, but some are directly responsible for the advancement of human society, and some are only indirectly responsible. However, when Krishna consciousness is there, then everyone's total benefit is taken care of. So that's the point, that when there is actually Krishna consciousness, then all of this materialism becomes minimized. You see? The idea being, when there's not Krishna consciousness in the heart, then people become more and more interested in the so-called advancement of economic development. That's why this age is called Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga means Iron Age. Iron Age means very gross mentality. People have very gross mentality in this age. They think that by having machines and loud noises and horrible contraptions, and when you go to see people, there's so many machines. Whenever I go to see any relative, television is blaring, someone's playing on a computer, someone's mucking around with some noisy gadget, and you think this is hell. You actually think I'm in hell. Because in actuality, there's no peace, there's no tranquility, there's no calmness, there's no satisfaction. And because of this artificial society, people are always disturbed. They are always disturbed. Above all, always disturbed, because they have created artificial living, created artificial way of life. Just like you're living in the center of London. Horrible experience, isn't it? As soon as you walk out, you're being harassed. You're being, attacked by so many horrible things and horrible people. You find people walking around looking miserable. So miserable, isn't it? They're looking miserable because it's misery. You see? They don't understand. They don't understand that by association with this material energy, you become more and more engrossed in impersonalism. Because all of this energy is simply there to actually pull you away from Krishna. So therefore, this example is there, that in the material world, just like one time, Śrīla Bhakti, I like this quote, because Bhaktisiddhanta was asked, Śrīla Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he says that, is there anything that you observe which is antagonistic to the philosophy of the Bhagavad? And he said, every thought that comes out of the mind of man is opposed to the philosophy of the Bhagavad. Every thought that comes out of the mind of man is directly opposed to the philosophy of the Bhagavad. So you find that actually, what is this creation? This creation in the material world is simply mental disturbance. That is all. What you are seeing in Oxford Street and all of the, we used to call that the Agasura demon. When we used to go in Harinam, we used to see Oxford because we used to come from Bury Place. So we'd have to come up the street and we'd see this horrible metropolis in front of us, and we'd think, this is just like going into the belly of Agasura. And as we go up there, sure enough, we'd see a tremendous amount of suffering. Actually, when you look, if you want to see suffering, you walk up and down Oxford Street a few times. I guarantee you, halfway down Oxford Street, you become completely miserable yourself. You become completely miserable yourself. Because actually, this whole material arrangement is full of misery. It's full of misery. And therefore, this point probably laboring a bit, but the point is that this simple living, Krishna consciousness means very simple living, that we should make our life very simple. Just like we find that Prabhupada wanted to start these farm communities, but no one's attracted. No one's attracted. Everyone's attracted to city living, motorways, cars, fast life. We find that the actual pace by which we live, even in our Krishna conscious movement, there's so many breakup of marriages, divorce, arguments, quarreling, because nobody is actually happy. You see, we're living artificially. We should be very careful about living artificially. This living in cities is only for preaching. Otherwise, we have no interest in this type of living. But if one has simple living, meaning that there should be this Varnashram Dharma, we must have farm communities, there should be very nice river, very nice production of agriculture, very nice production of cow protection, Goraksha, and there you find that actually it's a wonderful, natural life. So when Krishna comes here, he comes to demonstrate what is the reality behind the creation. That the reality is that all of the natural things, such as the rivers, the hills, the waterfalls, the production of grains and fruits and vegetables, and the protection of cows, and there should be abundance of cow milk. And of course, the most important thing, just like Prabhupada says, in the villages of India. Prabhupada said before the British came to India, there was no cities. There was only villages. Even today, 80% of the Indian population live in villages. And Prabhupada said in the village, and I've been there myself, they live very, very simple. They have some cows, some land, production of vegetables and grains. And in the evening, they all come together and they discuss philosophy. They have Ramayana reading, they have Srimad Bhagavatam reading, they have discussions on Krishna's pastimes. And of course, they should have the chanting of Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So therefore, Krishna is actually, in one sense, directing the coward men of Vrindavan to worship Govardhan Hill. But in reality, we can understand that Govardhan Hill is also incarnation of the Supreme Lord. He is also, as it says here, a great devotee of the Lord. And therefore, when the coward men began to worship Govardhan Hill, then Indra became very angry. And then, of course, Indra became so disturbed that he sends devastating rainfall in Vrindavan. When Indra understood that the sacrifice offered by the coward men in Vrindavan was stopped by Krishna, he became angry. And he vented his anger upon the inhabitants of Vrindavan, who were headed by Nanda Maharaj. Although Indra knew perfectly well that Krishna was personally protecting them, and the director of different kinds, as the director of different kinds of clouds, Indra called for the Sambartaka clouds. This cloud is invited when there is a need to devastate the whole cosmic manifestation. So Indra was pretty angry. He was pretty angry. He wanted to just wipe them all out. So this is the nature of people who are puffed up. In the material world, everyone is puffed up. They're just different degrees. As Prabhupada said, every little pauper is proud of his penny. So when we have a little power, the first thing we do is get puffed up. Isn't it? It's natural. We have our own little ways of dealing with it. I'm not puffed up with you. I'm not puffed up. You're puffed up because you think I'm puffed up. But in actuality, we're all puffed up. And our nature is to be puffed up when we have anything. That's generally why Krishna is very kind. He doesn't let anyone have anything in this material world. Most people are running around penniless and ugly and helpless and uneducated, whatever. But as soon as there is any little kind of opulences, people become very proud. And of course, Prabhupada said this is the problem in the heavenly planets, that they're also devotees, but they're proud. So this pride is very dangerous. It's very dangerous in a devotee because the pride is the killer of devotion. One thing Krishna doesn't tolerate is false pride. He cannot tolerate false pride in his devotees. So therefore, generally you find devotees get chastised quite heavily by Krishna. So Lord Indra, although a devotee of kinds, at the same time Indra, because he's the king of heaven and because he controls over all of the rainfall, he became puffed up by the negligence of the coward man. So therefore, he became so angry, he sent this Sambartaka. So in the material world, as it says, one becomes frustrated. From frustrated comes anger, crow. So this crowed anger is extremely dangerous. So he became so angry that he wanted to pour devastating rainfall. Indra cursed the action of the inhabitants of Vrindavan and said, by defying the authority of the demigods, the inhabitants of Vrindavan will suffer in material existence. Having neglected the sacrifice of the demigods, they cannot cross over the impediments of the ocean of material misery. Indra further declared, these coward men in Vrindavan have neglected my authority on the advice of this talkative boy who is known as Krishna. He is nothing but a child, and by believing this child they have enraged me. Thus he ordered a Sambartaka cloud to go and destroy the property of Vrindavan. So generally we find that people have no actual, respect for Krishna. Even in India, people, they tend to worship Ram more, because he was a big king, and Krishna is very confusing. First of all, he's a little coward boy running around hills with cows, and then he seems to play around with a lot of girls, which people can't understand. So therefore, generally, even in India, people, they understand Krishna is God, but they're not sure, they're confused how he's God. So this is actually one of the beautiful things about the personality of God, is that the most difficult thing to understand about anyone is their personality. The most difficult thing to understand about anyone is their personality. So if you project that onto God, the most difficult thing to understand about God is His personality. And that's why you cannot become a devotee until you understand the personality of God. You must understand the personality of God. And that personality of God, as we are singing every morning in this Damodar Ashtakam, He is not worshipped by this awe and veneration, but actually He is worshipped by Prema Bhakti, by Bhakti. Therefore, this bhakti is only actually there in the devotee. So we find that many people, they may be very exalted in the material sense, and they may be extremely advanced in the material sense, but they do not have devotion to Krishna. And therefore, Indra is also guilty of this. So, here... So, ordered by King Indra, all the dangerous clouds appeared above Vrindavan and began to walk forward incessantly. With all their strength and power, there was constant lightning and thunder, blowing a severe wind and incessant falling of rain. This rainfall seemed to fall like piercing sharp arrows. By pouring water as thick as pillars without cessation, the clouds gradually filled in the lands of Vrindavan with water, and there was no visible distinction between higher and lower land. The situation was very dangerous, especially for the animals. The rainfall was accompanied by great winds, and every living creature in Vrindavan began to tremble from the severe cold. Unable to find any other source of deliverance, they all approached Govinda to take shelter at his lotus feet. The cows especially, being much aggrieved from the heavy rain, bowed down their heads, and taking their calves underneath their bodies, they approached the Supreme Personality of Godhead to take shelter at his lotus feet. At that time, all the inhabitants of Vrindavan began to pray to Lord Krishna. Dear Krishna, they prayed, you are all-powerful and you are very affectionate to your devotees. Now please protect us, as we are very much harassed by angry Indra. Upon hearing their prayers, Krishna could also understand that Indra, being bereft of his sacrificial honor, was pouring down rain and was accompanied by heavy pieces of ice and strong winds. Although all this was out of season, Krishna understood that this was a deliberate exhibition of anger by Indra. He therefore concluded, this demigod who thinks himself supreme has shown his great power, but I shall answer him according to my position, and I shall teach him that he is not autonomous in managing universal affairs. I am the Supreme Lord over all, and I shall thus take away his false prestige, which has arisen from his power. Thinking in this way, Lord Krishna immediately picked up Govardhan Hill in one hand, exactly as a child picks up a mushroom from the ground. Now, Govardhan Hill at that time was much, much bigger than it is now. So I think even if you lifted it now, it would be pretty heavy. So if you try lifting a rock, it's very, very heavy. Govardhan Hill, as far as my calculation, there's different... People have different views on it, but it was something like 46,000 feet high. That's according to what I read. But you can all find out if you measure a if you measure a mustard seed, go back 5,000 years. Someone did it on computer and found that it was exactly correct. They got exact correct size. But according to they estimated the depletion by one mustard seed from 5,000 years ago, and they came to the same size as mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, as mentioned in the Vedas. That was done by the Vedas, by the way. So the thing is that the lifting of Govardhan Hill is this is one of the, of course, displays of the super wonderful, superhuman activities of the Lord. So Krishna lifted up the Govardhan Hill, and my dear inhabitants of Vrindavan, you can now safely enter under the umbrella of Govardhan Hill, which I have just lifted. Do not be afraid of the hill and think that it will fall from my hand. You have been too much afflicted from the heavy rain and strong wind. Therefore, I have lifted the hill, which will protect you exactly like a huge umbrella. I think this is a proper arrangement to relieve you from your immediate distress. Be happy along with your animals underneath the great umbrella. Being assured by Lord Krishna, all the inhabitants of Vrindavan entered beneath the great hill and appeared to be safe along with their property and animals. The inhabitants of Vrindavan and their animals remained there for 1 week without being disturbed by hunger, thirst, or any other discomforts. So this is Krishna consciousness. If you surrender to Krishna, Krishna will take care of everything. He will give you all protection. Sarvadama pratyadhyama mekam sanam raja hamtam sarvadhyam mukshishyam. Krishna says, give up all other endeavors. Prabhupada even uses the word, give up all other mental concoctions. Surrender unto me, and I will give you all shelter. So this wonderful pastime of Krishna is showing that actually he gave full shelter to all the inhabitants of Vrindavan. And even though they were under a hill for a week, no one suffered from any anxieties or thirst or hunger or any kind of discomfort. So be guaranteed, be assured that if you surrender to Krishna, you will not face any discomfort. And we see this, that in Krishna consciousness, so many people are coming, so many people are living there, and no one is facing any discomfort. No, you. There's no discomfort. The only discomfort is your mind. What can we do about that? But otherwise, every single facility is there. There's plenty of places to sleep, plenty of places for nice prasada. There are very nice arrangements. The buildings are all beautifully decorated. No one is living in a house like this, so nicely decorated. And the Supreme Personality of Godhead is there 24 hours a day. And the devotee has everything he needs. And yet, none of us have a job. So that is confusing. We don't have any job. I think in my life, when I was 17, I never wrote out even one tax return. But I've never been hungry. Never. Never been without anything. So a devotee should understand that. That simply by the lifting with his little finger, this little tiny finger on the left hand, Krishna is able to give all protection. So therefore, one should not have any worries. Therefore Krishna says, do not fear, surrender to me. Shri Giriraj Govardhan ki jai. Giriraj Maharaj ki jai. Go Prema.
Hare Bol.
Jai.